Did they know that the water system, the Flint River, from the Flint River, was dangerous? Okay, I can tell you for a fact, my client did not know.
This big downtown party called Super Bowl City stretches for several blocks. It's going to go on through this weekend. It's in the shadow of the Bay Bridge. It's all lit up, but security here is extremely tight.
Bankruptcy, along with a proper negotiation process with a leader who will stand up and fight for taxpayers, will result in both the school staying open, no layoffs.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It's 5:10. Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday. It's the 4th of February, 2016. Welcome to The Opening Bell today. A big day in the business world. Major government reports out today, including the Labor Department's report on unemployment. Commerce Department's also going to release factory orders for December. We're going to find out if the economy is slowing, if there is reason to be concerned. But first, here's your morning intel on the global markets. Most of the Asian stocks have jumped as oil prices bounced back, and weak U.S. economic data fueled investors' hope that the Fed will slow the pace of hikes this year. There are several reports out this morning that says the Fed will not raise interest rates again this year, even though they have promised to do it four more times. Japanese shares fell as the yen rose against the dollar. Investors are dialing back expectations as well because of this Fed decision or non-decision and all of these reports that are out this morning. On Wednesday, the private ICM survey found U.S. service companies grew in January at their slowest rate in nearly 2 years. So that's why we're going to watch these government reports today to see if they show further indications of a slowing economy. The dollar sank against the yen yesterday. Benchmark U.S. crude oil fell just a bit this morning in pre-market trading. Yesterday, it added 29 cents to $32.57 a barrel. There are reports today that Yahoo is still weighing an option of selling some or all of its core web advertising and media business. The Sunnyvale, California company, an originator of the original internet search, has had a tough time in recent years, and they've been cutting employees. Yesterday on CNBC, the CEO, Marissa Mayer, sounded like a CEO looking for a deal. Yahoo is tumbling. It has cut its workforce, refocusing its business on fewer products, in particular Yahoo, Mail, and Tumblr. Also, a big boost in video subscribers beefed up Comcast revenue. A surge in new video subscribers for the last quarter put the media giant up over 89,000 subscribers. That's the most in 8 years. Company is attempting to improve customer service and boosting its efforts as it battles for viewers with the likes of Netflix and Hulu. Among the earners out today will be LinkedIn. Analysts are expecting strong showing from the company, as investors seem to be having an opposite reaction. Shares of LinkedIn are trading lower about 6% yesterday, a day before these fourth quarter earnings are out. Analysts surveyed by FactSet expect LinkedIn to report adjusted earnings of 78 cents a share. The estimated consensus made up about 243 different analysts who looked at that. And that brings us to our first guests here on The Opening Bell. On the line with us this morning are the authors of a new book on how you can use LinkedIn to further your career and also do it properly. And we want to welcome into the program this morning the authors of that book. I'm trying to get my computer screen up here. Ken Williams and Ron Sukanek. The book is called 21 Days to Success with LinkedIn, the Business of Social Networking. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. Well,
good morning, Steve, and thanks for the invite.
No, I'm glad that you're on. We're going to have a full conversation with you coming up, but give us a little teaser of what we're in for here, because I bet you're going to tell us we're not using LinkedIn properly.
Yeah, we will tell you that, Steve. You know, think about it for a moment. I mean, the largest professional database in the world, 400 million people worldwide, stretching 200 countries. You've got 35 billion page views on LinkedIn, second quarter of 2015. You've got 48% of all adult male and females in our country with about 118 million people on it. That's half of all the people that are on LinkedIn this morning. But the fact is very few people understand why they're there in the first place.
Well, we'll continue our discussion with this coming up here on the opening bell. 21 days to success with LinkedIn. First, let's get an update on traffic. And good morning, Mary Vandeville.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Most Asian stocks have jumped as oil prices bounce back and weak U.S. economic data fuels investor hopes that the Fed will slow the pace of rate hikes this year. The Dow rose 183 points yesterday to 16,337. The S&P 500 picked up 10 points. The NASDAQ Composite fell 13. President Obama is applauding the signing of a free trade agreement that he says would support jobs in the United States. 12 countries have signed on to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has recommended that Congress wait to vote on it until after the presidential election. The IRS says it has stopped accepting electronically filed tax returns because of problems with some of its computer systems. The agency calls it a hardware failure, hopes to have it fixed today. Johnson & Johnson, long searching for a type 1 diabetes cure, is joining forces with biotech company ViaCyte to speed development of the first stem cell treatment. Testing has begun on a small number of diabetic patients. That's a first. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 520, and we're talking to the authors of 21 Days to Success with LinkedIn, the Business of Social Networking. Ken Williams and Ron Sukunik are with us. And guys, I understand you're both from Indiana, so you're kind of neighbors to us.
We are. Yeah. We are.
So, you know, you and all the rest of us are kind of getting up and getting going this morning. What is the thing that we can all do with our LinkedIn accounts to make it better today before we go to work?
The first thing I would say is get on, check your notifications, and respond to any emails. Check to see if you have any connection requests, and just look for one or two people that you can make a that you can continue to connect with, whether it's a birthday or a new job or anything at all, just to advance the relationship.
And would that include, you know, giving them the credit if you want to, you know, say they're good at something, or just send them a note, or what would you suggest?
Well, I think the real suggestion, Steve, is you know, understand why you're on LinkedIn. If, you know, it's the largest professional database in the world, so you'd want to build an online reputation. Make sure you have a completed profile. Have some kind of a connection strategy. Know why you're there. And then engage with people. LinkedIn is all about conversation. It's a two-way street. And it's not just you searching for people. It's lots of people searching for you. The question is, can they find you? And are you optimizing what you have?
The other thing, too, yesterday, somebody said as we were having this discussion and kind of looking over all of our LinkedIn accounts, was it's probably more important if you're a business person, if you're a professional person, than Facebook is. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that I found is as we started putting the book together, I think Ron probably agrees with me, a lot of us thought of LinkedIn as a social networking site, kind of like a business person's Facebook. And we learned that it really is, it's not. It's a database. It has some elements of the social networking like Facebook and Twitter, but it's a database, and it's a very powerful database of business people, for business people, designed by business people to really help us connect with people in a way that we never had the opportunity to connect with them before.
One question that we had is, do you accept requests from everybody, or do you have to be selective, or how does that work? Because on Facebook, you know, you may have pictures of your children or something, and you don't want to just accept requests from anybody. How does that work on LinkedIn?
Well, they have three different levels, or degrees, if you will, Steve, 1, 2, and 3. The people that can connect directly to me are people that just feel that maybe they have something in common. So the answer to your question is no, I don't connect with just anybody. If you don't have a picture, if you don't have a completed profile, if you don't show any endorsements or even recommendations on who you are and what you do, and I don't know you, you know, I'm going to question that. And my question is, why do they want to connect with me? What is it that maybe we have in common? So I'm open for that discussion, but I'm not there to collect connections. Because I don't want to confuse activity for accomplishment, and the truth of it is there is some spam. So, no, I don't connect with everybody. There's got to be something in common. It's the same thing, Steve, when people look at our profile. Everybody that's listening probably gets that. Take a look at who's looked at your profile. Well, the question is, Why are they looking at my profile? And maybe there is a connection, because the connection between me and the people on LinkedIn is between me, those people, and something else. The question is, what's that something else?
How do you guys like the way they've revamped the look and feel of LinkedIn and the news feed that they have on there? How often should you be utilizing that to promote yourself and what you've been doing?
We recommend that you get on there every day. And it's a habit to get into. The more frequently that you're on, the more that you're updating your status and reviewing other people's statuses and liking those, the greater your reach is going to be. The more people that you have in your network will see what you have, what you've posted, any articles or anything that you've linked to. And that will expand your network and give you greater visibility.
If you're looking for a job, is it probably a good idea to go to the advanced level? And because you can sign up for that more professional level, is that a recommendation you guys would make?
Well, when you say advanced level, Steve, you're talking about a premium service. So everybody should know that you can get onto LinkedIn for free. Large percentage of users have a free account. But they also have what is known as the job seeker account. And the answer is yes, because it gives you more visibility, more outreach, and what they call in-mail. And I will make a comment that if there is anybody listening that's a veteran, past or present, the Department of Defense made it available for you to have a free job seeker account on LinkedIn. That saves you about $26 a month. But we certainly always suggest, Steve, that people include the job seeker account if you're looking for a job, because then people will access you more and you can reach out and reach recruiters or companies directly, even if you're not connected.
And you can also see more often who's seeing your profile. You can see everybody who sees your profile, right?
You get to see more people, correct.
Yeah. Okay, well, give us one mistake that everybody makes on LinkedIn that they shouldn't make.
Go ahead.
One of the biggest mistakes that I see is they let the default language that LinkedIn makes it very easy for you to make a connection request, for example, and they put language right in the box that says, I'd like to connect with you on LinkedIn. And one of the biggest mistakes that I see is people don't change that and make it personal. When I get a connection request, like Ron was saying, I want to know why people want to connect with me. So it's much more meaningful to me if I get a request from someone saying, hey, I read your book, I love it, would like to connect with you, or I heard you speak, or whatever. That's more meaningful to me than just that generic. And like Ron said, I tend to be a little bit more cautious about those people with the generic request. There are other mistakes as well, not having a profile picture, but leaving things as a default is one of the things that I see very frequently.
That's Ken Williams and Ron Sukenek. They're the authors of 21 Days to Success with LinkedIn, the business of social networking. You can find Ron on Twitter if you want to go there instead of LinkedIn at rsukenek, S-U-K-E-N-I-C-K, and Ken at the Ken Williams. Guys, thanks for being with us this morning, and we'll get your book and get with LinkedIn.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Fantastic.
All right, have a great day.
Thanks.
It's 5:27. This is the opening bell. Coming up in our next segment, we're going to check in with Jim Ryan on the very latest on the Zika virus and how it's affecting business travel and travel around the world, and some of the latest information on that. Also coming up, a wrongly convicted Chicago man has filed a lawsuit against the city, and Vic Vaughn's going to have that in the news. It is 5:27.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. Getting some high-tech help in locating your lost stuff. Do you often misplace things like your keys, luggage, or purse? Well, by simply attaching a tiny Bluetooth-enabled tracker called Tile to everyday items, you can find them instantly with the help of an app. Tile's Scott Shillington says since its introduction in 2014, the company's been hard at work perfecting the technology.
We've enhanced the product with a number of new features, community find improvement, knowing how many Tylers are around you. So lots is going on from a software standpoint.
They've also made it louder.
So when you're ringing a Tile and it's three times louder, it makes it three times as easy to find.
It also now works in reverse. So if you lose your phone,
I can take one of the Tiles. If I had the Tile in my hand that was connected to my keys and I'm running out the door and I can't find my phone, I double press the E on the Tile and it rings the phone.
Tile is available now for iOS and Android devices. With Tech Trends, I'm Daria Albinger, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 538. Welcome back to the program. Now to the business of sports as we all get ready for Super Bowl 50. It's this weekend, and one of the league's big wigs says he can foresee a day when the Super Bowl might be a completely digital offering. Kansas City Chiefs Chairman Clark Hunt on CNBC, a member of NFL's digital committee.
Well, it's certainly something that could happen in the near future. The league this year took a couple of steps to test broadcasting games from a digital standpoint, the first being the Jaguars-Bills game that was played in London this year. Yahoo carried that game, streamed that game. It was extremely successful. I believe they had 15 million unique users. And then the playoffs this year, in addition to being broadcast, they were also shown on a digital basis over the top. So it's something that's very much in the future. This year's Super Bowl will also be available from a digital standpoint in addition to being broadcast on CBS.
Kansas City Chiefs Chairman Clark Hunt, a member of the NFL Digital Committee. And it brings us to our conversation this morning with Mark Carman and Dale Buss, a contributor for Forbes magazine. You can find Mark on Twitter at TheCarm and Dale on Twitter at Dale D. Buss. Good morning, Dale. First of all, I want to go to you because you've written about a couple of the car companies who are really fighting to be the most popular this weekend when their ads run on the Super Bowl. Tell us about Hyundai.
Well, Hyundai's situation is significant because they had a rough year, the last couple of years in the U.S., because they have been relying too much on cars. And the most popular type of transportation now in U.S. dealerships obviously has become SUVs, crossovers, even pickup trucks. So what Hyundai needs to do is reposition itself as being relevant in those segments. And they introduced a couple of new vehicles lately, including the new Tucson SUV last year, which is very well received by reviewers and by the public. So what they need to do is kind of remind Americans again that they're relevant across the board with their offerings. And so they have made a big bet on the Super Bowl this year. I think they're going to have four different spots that total 3 minutes. So Hyundai's kind of taking a role that traditionally might have been occupied by, maybe General Motors in terms of trying to dominate the occasion just with the volume of its ads and the amount of time that it's taking up. And they are going to be in their advertising promoting a number of their products. So they want to essentially what they call win the Super Bowl. You know, whatever happens on the field, Hyundai wants to make sure when it comes to advertising that they win the Super Bowl.
Dale, in your opinion, is this a good buy, $5 million per 30 seconds? I mean, that seems a little bit like a lot of money to me, but perhaps that is something that Hyundai has calculated out.
Well, if you talk to marketing executives, they'll still say, even in this digital era, you know, as alluded to in the way you opened this segment, there is just simply nothing like the Super Bowl to get attention, to build brand awareness, to create excitement, to create buzz, which then is complemented before and after the game by strong social media campaigns. At $5 million, seems like a more than pocket change to you and me, but companies say it's well worthwhile, especially, you know, when you're like a Hyundai where you kind of need to pivot in a new direction and make a statement. It's a pretty good investment.
The estimate is $620 million in revenue this year that the Super Bowl will generate for the NFL. Of course, it's the Broncos and Panthers, if you've not been paying attention. But, Dale, do you think it's possible what Mr. Hunt said at getting into this segment, that maybe it might not be on television someday? Is that even a possibility?
I suppose, but we might be living on Mars when that happens. Television is still by far the most effective medium for this kind of event. And you're not seeing any kind of diminution of the television audience. I think it's going to be over 112 million Americans this year. Last year was maybe 110 million. Certainly what's happening, though, is you're seeing the so-called second screen phenomenon where everything that happens on TV, you know, is now complemented by digital content you can get on your iPhone or iPad or what have you. So there's a lot of that. For example, one of the most interesting things an advertiser is doing with the second screen and with digital content for this game is that Progressive, the insurance brand, is not going to have a commercial during the Super Bowl, but they are going to introduce a bingo game that you can play along with watching the advertisement during the game. So while you're sitting there watching the game and something on an advertisement comes up, Progressive has come up with a bingo game for that. And so they've managed to find a way digitally to participate in the game as an advertiser without having to shell out the $5 million.
So, Dale, just I'm looking at, you know, the bubble perhaps bursting at some point. Super Bowl I, 1967, a 30-second spot was $37,500. Super Bowl 50, we're at $5 million. That's a 12,500% increase. It took me all night to do the math there, but that's what it is. You know, the stock market in the same period of time has been up 2,140%. So you're talking about nearly six times the growth of the stock market. I don't know if you could have bought some form of ETF or whatever on Super Bowl commercials, but if you could have, you would have been a rich man.
Exactly.
Do you think this ever, you think any bubble at some point is going to pop, or we're just going to keep going, and in 50 more years it's going to be the same type of growth? Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball, but what's your guess?
Well, perhaps not the same type of growth, but if you think about Super Bowl I, I think they didn't even fill up the stadium. So it's not, you know, the stock market's been around for a lot longer, so I'm not sure it's a valid comparison. But to your point, sure, if the economy tanks, all bets are off, and, you know, who knows what could happen. But in terms of a marketing vehicle, I think the one vulnerability for the Super Bowl is not necessarily in terms of whether it's on TV or digital, but the NFL itself. You know, it certainly remains the premier marketing vehicle for any brand. But if the league continues to face problems on the concussion front, for example, and it certainly will, and the league itself is weakened and fan interest wanes a little bit, well, then obviously the Super Bowl becomes a less important phenomenon, and advertisers will reflect that. But that doesn't seem to be in the cards right now.
Dale Buss, a contributor for Forbes magazine, again on Twitter, at DLDBuss. And, of course, Mark Harmon, as always, thanks for being here at The Carm. We'll listen to you on WGN Plus and WGN Radio. Thanks, guys. Good discussion. I'll be watching Puppy Bowl, as a matter of fact.
Good move, Steve.
Because there's two puppies from Chicago that are going to be battling it out in Puppy Bowl this year. So. Have a nice day.
There's the ad in the Super Bowl, Puppy, Monkey, Baby.
Oh,
Make sure you watch that.
See, now we got to go Google Puppy, Monkey.
Puppy, Monkey, Baby, Mountain Dew Kickstart. Figures everybody loves puppies, monkeys, and babies, so they put them all together in one ad.
We'll have to go Google that right away. It's 5:45. This is the opening bell. Let's check traffic. Here's Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Dow futures are higher this morning, 50 points higher. S&P futures are up about 5 points. The price of oil at $32.35. And in Asia this morning, markets are generally up. The Nikkei is off, however, off 146. The Hang Seng, Shanghai are higher today. In Europe, markets are higher as well. Dow futures pointing towards a higher open later this morning on Wall Street. Let's get a look at some of the commodity prices. Good morning to Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Weather played a factor in the grain market and in the livestock market yesterday. Different parts of the world, though, because soybeans and corn came off six-week highs on the outlook for possible rain in Argentina, where they need it for their corn and soybean crops. And then here at home, that winter storm still having an impact on cattle futures at the Mercantile Exchange. Cattle futures up for a third straight day because it's difficult to get some of those cattle to market. Yesterday, packers processed 98,000 cattle. That's down from 11,000 a week ago, and that was because of the weather. As a result, we saw the live cattle contract yesterday in the February contract up $1.22 at $136.95. April feeder cattle up 72 cents at $157.72 a hundredweight. And February lean hogs ended the day 30 cents higher at $64.50. fertilizer maker Mosaic cutting phosphate production because of lower commodity prices and a lower demand expected for soybeans and corn during the spring planting season. And finally, Monsanto yesterday said it received import approval from China for its new genetically modified Roundup Ready 2 Xtend soybeans, and it will begin selling seeds in the U.S. and Canada. I'm Orion Samuelson.
It's 5:52. Welcome back to the opening bell, and we're going to talk just briefly here about the Zika virus making news today. Brazil's president's gone on national television and said that this has gone from what is a minor concern to a national emergency there. It is a world health emergency, the WHO declaring such. And the first case in the United States apparently is in Dallas, and that's where we find ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan this morning. Jim, how are folks there in Texas reacting to this?
Well, I think there is concern. This is not the first case in the United States. There have been others down in Florida. Primarily Gulf Coast is where you're going to find this because it is spread primarily by mosquito bites, a lot like West Nile virus. The concern here is that there's a case here in Dallas that was spread through sexual contact. Apparently someone who had traveled to Venezuela came back here. That person's sexual partner had never been to that part of the world, but suddenly came down with Zika. It's thought that that person contracted it through contact with his or her spouse. They haven't, by the way, identified who that person was, even the gender. But that is sort of upping the concern here that there are ways to spread it that previously had not been widely reported. You know, there have been previous cases like that, sexual transmission of Zika, but not since 2013 and before that, 2008.
There are concerns, you know, with among travelers. It's spring break season, obviously, for just regular people who are off vacationing. But for business travelers who fly every day and go to different cities, especially in the South, what advice are they being given by health experts as they travel?
Well, much the same kind of advice that's given every year with regards to West Nile virus. Wear long sleeves, wear DEET, you know, spray that stuff so that you're not going to be bitten by mosquitoes, because that's primarily the way that this is spread. And health departments down here in Texas are treating it the same way. They've begun surveillance and mosquito trapping so that they can determine which of these mosquitoes are actually carrying it, what percentage of them might actually be infected with it. So it's sort of on the upside. It's a good thing that previously those health officials have dealt with mosquito-borne illness, because this is another one.
This sexually transmitted component, though, adds a new, you know, wrinkle of concern. Are people being advised not to have contact, that sort of contact, and maybe avoid travel to these areas where this virus could be lingering?
Yeah, I think the travel advisories are fairly common, but at the same time, if you have to travel down to that part of the world, you know, to Central America, South America, and then come back to this country, they're urging you to take the same kinds of precautions as you would to avoid HIV transmission, proper use of condoms, even abstinence before, you know, for some period until you're deemed to be safe and not carrying the Zika virus anymore. There are tests to determine whether, in fact, you're carrying it within your bloodstream.
And with the Olympics coming up in Brazil, this has obviously got a lot of people nervous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, you're going to have hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people headed to that part of the world, and millions of mosquitoes flying around looking for something to eat. And, that's part of, I think, what's ramping up the concern regarding Zika right now.
ABC News correspondent Jim Ryan with us from Dallas this morning on the Zika virus. We'll continue to follow this story throughout the morning and on the opening bell. And that's our program for today. Our producer is Mary Sandberg. Our production help from Kevin Powell and Ross Cochran. Our engineer today is Ben Cortez. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow, bright and early at 5 a.m. on the opening bell. Steve Cochran is next.